You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. You got termites in your smile. You've got all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch. Given the choice between the two of you, I'll take the seasick crocodile. You're a three-decker sauerkraut and toadstool sandwich. You nauseate me, I'm Mr. Grinch, with that nauseous super nose. You're a crooked turkey jockey and you drive a crooked horse, Mr. Grinch. Your soul is an appalling dump heap overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of deplorable rubbish imaginable, mangled up and tangled up knots. You're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a nasty, nasty skunk. Well, your heart is full of unwashed socks. Your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Grinch. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote: stink, stink, stink,
The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a jolly, merry, happy, joyful, fantastic, exciting, fancy, magnificent, remarkable, special, white, sparkling, terrific, stunning, festive, and wonderful holiday season.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Nadine Fernell, a director at BC Craft Farmers Co-op, the organization she represents, BC CFC, a co-op comprised of microcultivators, nursery operators, processors, and independent retailers in British Columbia's cannabis industry, joins us today in CFUR studios. Advocacy for that industry is a part of their work, which is largely voluntary. Nadine Fernell, thanks for joining us in studio today. So recently, the federal government announced a GST holiday, and this program is going to see GST lifted from a list of specific products from December 14, 2024 to February 15, 2025. Cannabis products are not on that list. The benefits of this exemption could come to small local business within our town and in our region over this period, but because of that exemption, clearly it's not going to affect the cannabis industry or retailers in our area. From your perspective, what might be the reasons why?
Unfortunately, the government does not see cannabis aligned with alcohol. And we don't want to be aligned with alcohol. Many cannabis users don't drink alcohol and stop drinking alcohol with cannabis. Personally, I don't see the benefit on alcohol or cannabis, really. Lower the price of gas. It's great on certain grocery items. We all like to have some Christmas spirit through the holidays. Personally, I feel that they could have attached it to much more important items than alcohol or cannabis.
We'll circle back to Nadine Fernell of the BC Craft Farmers Co-op in a moment. For now, let's move from the bowl of Prince George up to the lip to speak with...
Annie Lewis. I'm the assistant manager at North Country Cannabis.
And...
It's Jonathan Stewart, and I'm the general manager at North Country Cannabis,
a retailer of cannabis products in Prince George's Heart Highlands. As they took me on a tour behind the scenes of their storefront, I was met with an enthusiastic greeting by a completely silent bulldog and one spunky puppy.
I know how she feels about the GST now.
Yeah, she's not
world either.
I think that they're definitely, like, while we're slowly breaking down walls to have us be at least as accepted as liquor, there's definitely still a huge stigma around our industry, and a lot of people, you know, have this idea that there's some sort of like toxicity to the environment that we work in. And I think people have this imagination that, you know, that we're here at work getting high and things like that, and those are just not the case. And, you know, like, this is a real upstanding business that pays taxes, and we support our local community. We're owned locally, and to have these two different tiers of system, yeah, it definitely feels like we're definitely more regulated. And it feels like it's because some people just have this feeling that cannabis is like lowering society in some way. I think that there should be more parity within the industries. If there's going to be, you know, regulations across all of these, then they should at least, you know, sort of fit into a bit more of a uniform system.
The cannabis industry's exclusion from the GST exemption program over the solstice period is one of several perceived separations that those involved in the industry feel. We move the conversation back to the BC CFC's Nadine Furnell to zero in on the co-op's perspective.
Do you think that exemption would help retailers of cannabis products if that exemption were to be applied? Or do you think it'd be kind of irrelevant?
From a retailer perspective, I think the accounting of it to change your whole entire system to take off the GST for a set period of time, and what specifically, it's an accounting nightmare. And, you know, from what I understand, the work required to put into it for a 2-month GST rebate, you know, you can only buy a maximum of an ounce at a time from any retailer. So that's $100 to $150. So for $5, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's not about the GST coming off or, you know, anything. It's the fact that cannabis rules and regulations should be aligned with alcohol.
One might be wondering, come on, there's got to be some part of this GST exemption that applies to a cannabis retailer. Annie and Jonathan have the answer.
No, the only thing I can think of is maybe the books we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that is like, we have 3 books and we've had them since we've opened. People aren't buying weed books at a weed store. They're not. No, it should include cannabis. It really should.
Thank you all. Yeah, I really appreciate this. Thanks so much for your time.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
Attention, women in science, technology, engineering, and math. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting on your journey, the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology is here to support you every step of the way. From mentorship programs to networking and skill-building events, we've got the tools and resources you need to succeed and thrive in STEM. Visit SCWIST.ca to learn more. That's SCWIST.ca. We can't wait to connect with you. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
We all know that one. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas by Kylie V from their record Baby's First Christmas. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. And now we are going to hear a great interview by our community journalist, Danny, with Chloe Goodison about Nalok's Home. And that'll take us almost right up until the top of the hour when Democracy Now! Will play. But I'll come back to say goodbye. So enjoy this.
Reporting from Burnaby, British Columbia, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Nalok's Home is a nonprofit society that provides destigmatizing public education services that inform youth throughout British Columbia on how to identify the signs of an overdose and how to effectively use naloxone in the event of an overdose. Naloxone is a medication used to reverse or reduce the effects of opioids, and its usage has only increased in importance as the opioid crisis in BC has continued. This is something that was recognized by Chloe Goodison, a health sciences student at Simon Fraser University who began the organization during her first year of university in 2021. CJSF recently sat down with Goodison to discuss what inspired her to start Nalok's Home, the work that they continue to do, as well as the ways in which she hopes that the organization is able to grow beyond BC. Please take a listen. I'm joined here in studio with Chloe Goodison, the founder of Nalok's Home. And I think the first thing I want to ask you is if you can explain to people what Nalok's Home is and how you came about starting it.
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for having me. Nalok's Home Society is a registered Canadian charity that I started almost 4 years ago when I was in my first year at Simon Fraser University, actually. It is a education service, and we go into high schools. Teachers can book us anywhere across Canada, but we really target British Columbia. And we can go in and we provide drug education and naloxone training workshops in response to British Columbia's ongoing and deadly growing overdose epidemic. We're a team of all youth, so I have a team of 85, 18 to 25-year-olds on my team, and we go in and provide peer-to-peer, youth-to-youth drug education and naloxone training.
You said you started this in your first year.
Yeah.
How does a first-year university student even think to start a nonprofit society?
Very good question, and it kind of happened by fluke, if I'm being honest. When I was in high school, I first of all, the overdose crisis was declared in 2016, which mm-hmm. is the year that I started grade 9. And it was grade 10 going into grade 11 that I was on public transportation, knew nothing about the overdose crisis, had maybe heard the word, and I witnessed an overdose, which is not rare. It's not a news flash story that I saw. We've probably all walked past somebody experiencing a drug poisoning. And this is what really got me involved in the realm of drug poisonings and harm reduction. And I really was surprised that I was witnessing this in my own community of Port Moody, British Columbia. In my head, I thought all drug use and overdoses were isolated to the downtown east side. And this was just a preconceived stigma that I had based on basically no exposure to drug education. Then I entered my first year of university in 2020. So it was online and I did have a little bit more free time because there wasn't volunteer opportunities in clubs and sports happening. So basically, I was scrolling on Facebook one night and I saw an ad from SFU's Office of Community Engagement that they run an annual community engagement competition. It's called the Student Community Engagement Competition. And this is an opportunity where you can enter a idea of something, a way to fix a problem in your community. You have to identify community partners you've connected with, and you can compete to win $3,000 to implement this community project. So I thought, okay, well, I've been volunteering in harm reduction for a while. I saw this drug overdose on SkyTrain a few years ago, and nobody knew what to do, despite it being a declared overdose crisis. How can I find a way to provide accessible and equitable drug education with naloxone training that youth will actually listen to? So I got 12 of my friends, all also in first year, and we met up on Zoom, and we just had this idea, and we just brainstormed a curriculum and what items are important to talk about to youth. What should youth be knowing about our drug overdose crisis? And I won that competition. And since then, we registered as a society. We've got a lot more funding than $3,000. And like I said before, we've grown our team to over 80 people.
How do you develop the presentations?
That's a great question. So really, in that original brainstorming session I had with the team I put together at the very beginning, we went through the topics that we thought had to be included. Like, how do we give youth a very well-rounded understanding of this problem? And it starts with talking about stigma and talking about, you know, what are the current ideas we have around people who use drugs, and what... is that true? And we walked through some language swap outs that we can use. Instead of saying addicts or junkies, we say people who use drugs or people who are in a relationship with a substance. So it's really starting at ground zero there, and then working into talking about harm reduction and what is harm reduction in a non-drug related sense. You know, do you ride your bike? Do you wear a helmet? Do you put sunscreen on in the summer? All examples of harm reduction. It just makes sense. In the same way that naloxone or drug checking services just make sense. They keep people alive. From there, we really wanted to get into some statistics around how hard-hitting the overdose crisis is in all parts of our province, not just the downtown east side, not just Surrey Central, every pocket of the province. And then the bread and butter of the presentation is the naloxone training. So we took this presentation to a partner we had at the Tri-Cities Community Overdose Action Team, where it's a team of different community members and problem solvers, like a Fraser Health official, a SHARE Family and Community Services representative. And they looked over our presentation and trained us on how to deliver it in a sensitive and culturally safe way. And from there, we trained each other and just launched in and made sure everything in our presentation was 100% science-backed and accurate.
Yeah, would you say part of that stigma, too, is taking away some of that fear of even being around naloxone itself?
Oh, 100%. You know, something we've had a lot of parents and students say before they've actually seen our presentation is that carrying naloxone is enabling substance use, which is so, so incorrect. And we definitely found that students have been scared to... We've actually found that 75% of students didn't know about naloxone and didn't know how to use it, didn't know you could get it for free. So we're really myth-busting that and just providing that education that students can go get a life-saving naloxone kit. But there is that the portion of students, too, who are scared, and they're scared of needles, which is fair. And we've educated them that there's multiple kinds of naloxone available, not just needle naloxone. But I'd really say that there's still that public misconception that harm reduction enables substance use and that drug education in schools enables substance use, but it does not. It's not correlated with increased substance use initiation.
There was pretty recent data from the province saying that there's apparently been a significant decline in drug deaths within BC, about 9% since last year. Would you say that's kind of like a statistical anomaly, or is there any sort of, I guess, information you have, you know, with the work that you do, that may provide some insight on that?
I mean, of course, it's a mixed reaction for me, because of course, part of me is like, oh my gosh, something is maybe working, like something is contributing to a decrease in deaths. But it's still way too many deaths. These are our family members, our community members, our loved ones who are dying at higher rates than anything else. You know, this is still our leading cause of death for people aged 10 to 59 in British Columbia. So as much as we can maybe hold on to a sliver of hope that something's working to decrease, whether it's, you know, increased access to harm reduction services or less people using alone, hopefully those elements that maybe are happening are continuing. But we also have to remember this is every single drug poisoning death is preventable, and there are still far too many happening.
Yeah, it's such a multifaceted issue, but I guess with naloxone specifically, I think it seems like the part that you're trying to address is like the stigma around it and making sure that drug education matches the seriousness and the prevalence of the issue.
100%. You know, I never questioned receiving sexual education in school. It's just what you do. You learn, you teach young people how to make informed and empowered decisions about their own health and safety, same way you would about substance use. And by continuing to put our heads in the sand and pretending that talking about drug education in schools is just going to make youth want to use drugs, that's not the truth. And we have to provide young people with the tools to not just prevent and recognize, but also respond to an overdose. Because personally, if I had received this workshop in school, I probably would have thought right off the bat, I don't use drugs that I'm at risk of illicit drug toxicity with. So I'm not, this isn't going to connect to me. But why we, how we've tried to navigate that narrative is by saying we can all witness it. This is our leading cause of death. Over 35,000 people call 911 each year for suspected overdose. We're all at risk of witnessing an overdose. So knowing how to not just prevent and recognize, but respond, carrying naloxone, saving a life, it's important.
And yeah, like you said, I guess comparing it also to just other basic safety protocols that we just have in our daily lives that are so normalized and feel like second nature, getting to that point.
Totally.
Last question I want to ask you is, if you have current plans or aspirations for how you want naloxone to grow, past even BC perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, what I've learned is that there's a need right across Canada, North America really, for youth-to-youth delivered substance use education. And yes, there are other vehicles of substance use education. You have your programs that preach just say no. You have your programs that are led by police officers coming in and using scare tactics. Our overdose numbers have really just gone up. Of course, yes, there was a bit of a decrease, but that's not because of the DARE program. So yes, we need to find a way to scale this model of having young people just chatting with their peers about how, hey, drug use is happening. These are the tools available to keep you alive. So, I mean, next steps are really just expanding our in-person operations province-wide. Right now, we're pretty far across Metro Vancouver. We'll do anything Vancouver to Mission in person. But, you know, getting an island branch, getting a northern health branch, a interior branch going, just so we can really get into those rural and remote communities that are so disproportionately affected by our drug poisoning crisis. And after that, it's hopping into other provinces. Every single day I have emails from Alberta, Manitoba, Ontario, these awesome community advocates who see the work we're doing and recognize that there's nothing else like it, and they want to develop naloxone society branches of their own out in their regions. So that's really the next step, just scaling and capacity building and fundraising for that. But I'm continuously impressed and motivated by the community support. We've had an overwhelming number of people cheer us on, and a very, very slim number of people who do not agree with the work we're doing. So I'm definitely motivated, to say the least.
I know I said last question, but I guess last thing is, you know, you're still in school. You're a student at Simon Fraser University. Yeah. Post-graduation, is the plan to really focus on naloxone and the ways that it can expand?
Yeah, oh, 100%. So I'm just finishing up my Bachelor of Science in Health Sciences right now, and I'm so grateful to be part of a faculty that's so understanding of the work I'm doing, and they're so supportive. And, you know, my professors are always asking me questions and engaging with me and understanding that I do work, this is my full-time job. So balancing the full-time student course load with the full-time entrepreneurial course lifestyle, I suppose, is challenging, but I find ways to take breaks. However, it will be very nice once I have achieved that Bachelor of Science and I have it, and then I can, you know, really be full-time and continue scaling this out and driving this change, and eventually, you know, stepping out of the role. And I probably want to do more school, so finding who's next to lead this youth-run organization and what other change can happen under other leadership. But that's way in the future. I'm here for now.
Once again, that was our interview with Chloe Goodison, Executive Director and Founder of Naloxone. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This interview would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Thanks to Danny, to the LJI, and to Chloe Goodison for sitting down with Danny. Great organization, great work being done there, and yeah, just happy to be able to share that with you. Also happy to share holiday greetings with you. This is my last episode of this program before the new, before the new year. There will be obviously an episode next Thursday on Boxing Day, but it will be pre-recorded. And then I'll be back on January 2nd, 2025. Holy moly. Okay. Take care of yourself. Have a wonderful holiday season. And I will see you next time. This is The Forest Creatures.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting.